15. Pilchard and Wren. Captain Pilchard and Captain Wren, the inoffensive joint squadron operations officers, were both mild, soft-spoken men of less than middle height who enjoyed flying combat missions and begged nothing more of life and Colonel Cathcart than the opportunity to continue flying them. They had flown hundreds of combat missions and wanted to fly hundreds more. They assigned themselves to every one. Nothing so wonderful as war had ever happened to them before, and they were afraid it might never happen to them again. They conducted their duties humbly and reticently, with a minimum of fuss, and went to great lengths not to antagonize anyone. They smiled quickly at everyone they passed. When they spoke, they mumbled. They were shifty, cheerful, subservient men who were comfortable only with each other and never met anyone else's eye, not even Yossarian's eye, at the open-air meeting they called to reprimand him publicly for making Kid Samson turn back from the mission to Bologna.
"Those,"
said Captain Pilchard, who had thinning dark hair and smiled awkwardly,
"when you turn back from a mission, try to make sure it's for something important, will you? Not for something unimportant, like a defective intercom or something like that. Okay?"
Captain Wren has more he wants to say to you on that subject.
"Captain Pilchard's right, fellas," said Captain Wren. "And that's all I'm going to say to you on that subject. Well, we finally got to Bologna today, and we found out it's a milk run. We were all a little nervous, I guess, and didn't do too much damage. Well, listen to this. Colonel Cathcart got permission for us to go back, and tomorrow we're really going to paste those ammunition dumps. Now, what do you think about that?"
And to prove to Yossarian that they bore him no animosity, they even assigned him to fly lead bombardier with McWatt in the first formation when they went back to Bologna the next day. He came in on the target like a Havermeyer, confidently taking no evasive action at all. And suddenly they were shooting the living shit out of him. Heavy flak was everywhere. He had been lulled, lured, and trapped, and there was nothing he could do but sit there like an idiot and watch the ugly black puffs smashing up to kill him. There was nothing he could do until his bombs dropped, but look back into the bomb sight where the fine crosshairs in the lens were glued magnetically over the target exactly where he had placed them, intersecting perfectly deep inside the yard of his block of camouflaged warehouses before the base of the first building. He was trembling steadily as the plane crept ahead. He could hear the hollow boom, 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 boom of the flak pounding all around him in overlapping measures of four, the sharp, piercing crack of a single shell exploding suddenly very close by. His head was busting with a thousand dissonant impulses as he prayed for the bombs to drop. He wanted to sob. The engines droned on monotonously like a fat, lazy fly. At last, the indices on the bomb site crossed, tripping away the 8 500-pounders one after the other. The plane lurched upward buoyantly with the lightened load. Yossarian bent away from the bomb site crookedly to watch the indicator on his left. When the pointer touched zero, he closed the bomb bay doors and over the intercom at the very top of his voice shrieked, "Turn right, hard!" McWatt responded instantly. With a grinding howl of engines, he flipped the plane over on one wing and wrung it around remorselessly in a screaming turn away from the twin spires of flak Yossarian had spied stabbing toward them. Then Yossarian had McWatt climb and keep climbing higher and higher until they tore free, finally, into a calm, diamond-blue sky that was sunny and pure everywhere and laced in the distance with long, white veils of tenuous fluff. The wind strummed soothingly against the cylindrical panes of his windows, and he relaxed exultantly only until they picked up speed again and then turned McWatt left and plunged him right back down, noticing with a transitory spasm of elation the mushrooming clusters of flak leaping open high above him and back over his shoulder to the right, exactly where he could have been if he had not turned left and dived. He leveled McWatt out with another harsh cry and whipped him upward and around again into a ragged blue patch of unpolluted air, just as the bombs he had dropped began to strike. The first one fell in the yard, exactly where he had aimed. And then the rest of the bombs from his own plane and from the other planes in his flight burst open on the ground in a charge of rapid orange flashes across the tops of the buildings, which collapsed instantly in a vast, churning wave of pink and gray and coal-black smoke that went rolling out turbulently in all directions and quaked convulsively in its bowels, as though from great blasts of red and white and golden sheet lightning.
"Well, will you look at that?"
Arfi marveled sonorously right beside Yossarian, his plump orbicular face sparkling with a look of bright enchantment.
"There must have been an ammunition dump down there."
Yossarian had forgotten about Arfi.
"Get out!" he shouted at him. "Get out of the nose!"
Arfi smiled politely and pointed down toward the target in a generous invitation for Yossarian to look. Yossarian began slapping at him insistently and signaled wildly toward the entrance of the crawlway.
"Get back in the ship!" he cried frantically. "Get back in the ship!"
Arfi shrugged amiably.
"I can't hear you," he explained.
Yossarian seized him by the straps of his parachute harness and pushed him backward toward the crawlway, just as the plane was hit with a jarring concussion that rattled his bones and made his heart stop. He knew at once they were all dead.
"Climb!" he screamed into the intercom at McWatt when he saw he was still alive. "Climb, you bastard! Climb! 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 Climb!"
The plane zoomed upward again in a climb that was swift and straining, until he leveled it out with another harsh shout at McWatt and wrenched it around once more in a roaring, merciless 45-degree turn that sucked his insides out in one enervating sniff and left him floating fleshless in midair, until he leveled McWatt out again just long enough to hurl him back around toward the right and then down into a screeching dive. Through endless blobs of ghostly black smoke he sped, the hanging smut wafting against the smooth plexiglass nose of the ship like an evil, damp, sooty vapor against his cheeks. His heart was hammering again in aching terror as he hurtled upward and downward through the blind gangs of flak charging murderously into the sky at him, then sagging inertly. Sweat gushed from his neck in torrents and poured down over his chest and waist with the feeling of warm slime. He was vaguely aware for an instant that the planes in his formation were no longer there, and then he was aware of only himself. His throat hurt like a raw slash from the strangling intensity with which he shrieked each command to McWatt. The engines rose to a deafening, agonized, ululating bellow each time McWatt changed direction. And far out in front, the bursts of flak were still swarming into the sky from new batteries of guns poking around for accurate altitude as they waited sadistically for him to fly into range. The plane was slammed again suddenly with another loud, jarring explosion that almost rocked it over on its back, and the nose filled immediately with sweet clouds of blue smoke. Something was on fire! Yossarian whirled to escape and smacked into Arfi, who had struck a match and was placidly lighting his pipe. Yossarian gaped at his grinning moon-faced navigator in utter shock and confusion. It occurred to him that one of them was mad.
"Jesus Christ!" he screamed at Arfi in tortured amazement. "Get the hell out of the nose! Are you crazy? Get out!"
"What?" said Arfi.
"Get out!"
Yossarian yelled hysterically and began clubbing Arfi backhanded with both fists to drive him away.
"Get out! I still can't hear you!"
Arfi called back innocently with an expression of mild and reproving perplexity.
"You'll have to talk a little louder." Get out of the nose! Yossarian shrieked in frustration. They're trying to kill us! Don't you understand? They're trying to kill us! Which way should I go, goddammit? McWatt shouted furiously over the intercom in a suffering, high-pitched voice. Which way should I go? Turn left! Left, you goddamn dirty son of a bitch! Turn left! Hard! Arfi crept up close behind Yossarian and jabbed him sharply in the ribs with the stem of his pipe. Yossarian flew up toward the ceiling with a whinnying cry, then jumped completely around on his knees, white as a sheet and quivering with rage. Arfi winked encouragingly and jerked his thumb back toward McWatt with a humorous moo. "What's eating him?" he asked with a laugh. Yossarian was struck with a weird sense of distortion. "Will you get out of here?" he yelped beseechingly and shoved Arfi over with all his strength. "Are you deaf or something? Get back in the plane!" And to McWatt he screamed, "Dive! Dive!" Down they sank once more into the crunching, thudding, voluminous barrage of bursting anti-aircraft shells as Arfi came creeping back behind Yossarian and jabbed him sharply in the ribs again. Yossarian shied upward with another whinnying gasp. "I still couldn't hear you," Arfi said. "I said, get out of here!" Yossarian shouted and broke into tears. He began punching Arfi in the body with both hands as hard as he could. "Get away from me! Get away!" Punching Arfi was like sinking his fists into a limp sack of inflated rubber. There was no resistance, no response at all from the soft, insensitive mass, and after a while Yossarian's spirit died, and his arms dropped helplessly with exhaustion. He was overcome with a humiliating feeling of impotence and was ready to weep in self-pity. "What did you say?" Arfi asked. "Get away from me," Yossarian answered, pleading with him now. "Go back in the plane! I still can't hear you! Never mind!" wailed Yossarian. "Never mind! Just leave me alone! Never mind what?" Yossarian began hitting himself in the forehead. He seized Arfi by the shirt front and, struggling to his feet for traction, dragged him to the rear of the nose compartment and flung him down like a bloated and unwieldy bag in the entrance of the crawlway. A shell banged open with a stupendous clout right beside his ear as he was scrambling back toward the front, and some undestroyed recess of his intelligence wondered that it did not kill them all. They were climbing again. The engines were howling again as though in pain, and the air inside the plane was acrid with the smell of machinery and fetid with the stench of gasoline. The next thing he knew, it was snowing. Thousands of tiny bits of white paper were falling like snowflakes inside the plane, milling around his head so thickly that they clung to his eyelashes when he blinked in astonishment and fluttered against his nostrils and lips each time he inhaled. When he spun around in bewilderment, Arfi was grinning proudly from ear to ear like something inhuman as he held up a shattered paper map for Yossarian to see. A large chunk of flak had ripped up from the floor through Arfi's colossal jumble of maps and had ripped out through the ceiling inches away from their heads. Arfi's joy was sublime.
"Will you look at this?"
he murmured, waggling two of his stubby fingers playfully into Yossarian's face through the hole in one of his maps.
"Will you look at this?"
Yossarian was dumbfounded by his state of rapturous contentment. Arfi was like an eerie ogre in a dream, incapable of being bruised or evaded, and Yossarian dreaded him for a complex of reasons he was too petrified to untangle. Wind whistling up through the jagged gash in the floor kept the myriad bits of paper circulating like alabaster particles in a paperweight, and contributed to a sensation of lacquered, waterlogged unreality. Everything seemed strange, so tawdry and grotesque.
His head was throbbing from a shrill clamor that drilled relentlessly into both ears. It was McWatt begging for directions in an incoherent frenzy. Yossarian continued staring in tormented fascination at Arfi's spherical countenance beaming at him so serenely and vacantly through the drifting whorls of white paper bits, and concluded that he was a raving lunatic, just as eight bursts of flak broke open successively at eye level off to the right. Then eight more, and then eight more. The last group pulled over toward the left so that they were almost directly in front. "Turn left, hard!" he hollered to McWatt as Arfi kept grinning, and McWatt did turn left hard, but the flak turned left hard with them, catching up fast. And Yossarian hollered, "I said hard! 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 Hard, you bastard! Hard!" And McWatt bent the plane around even harder still, and suddenly, miraculously, they were out of range. The flak ended. The guns stopped booming at them, and they were alive. Behind him, men were dying. Strung out for miles in a stricken, tortuous, squirming line, the other flights of planes were making the same hazardous journey over the target, threading their swift way through the swollen masses of new and old bursts of flak, like rats racing in a pack through their own droppings. One was on fire and flapped lamely off by itself, billowing gigantically like a monstrous blood-red star. As Yossarian watched, the burning plane floated over on its side and began spiraling down slowly in wide, tremulous, narrowing circles, its huge, flaming burden blazing orange and flaring out in back like a long, swirling cape of fire and smoke. There were parachutes. One, two, three, four. And then the plane gyrated into a spin and fell the rest of the way to the ground, fluttering insensibly inside its vivid pyre like a shred of colored tissue paper. One whole flight of planes from another squadron had been blasted apart. Yossarian sighed barrenly, his day's work done. He was listless and sticky. The engines crooned mellifluously as McWatt throttled back to loiter and allow the rest of the planes in his flight to catch up. The abrupt stillness seemed alien and artificial, a little insidious. Yossarian unsnapped his flak suit and took off his helmet. He sighed again, restlessly, and closed his eyes and tried to relax. "Where's Orr?" someone asked suddenly over his intercom. Yossarian bounded up with a one-syllable cry that crackled with anxiety and provided the only rational explanation for the whole mysterious phenomenon of the flak at Bologna. "Orr!" He lunged forward over the bombsite to search downward through the plexiglass for some reassuring sign of Orr, who drew flak like a magnet, and who had undoubtedly attracted the crack batteries of the whole Hermann Goering division to Bologna overnight from wherever the hell they had been stationed the day before when Orr was still in Rome. Arfi launched himself forward an instant later and cracked Yossarian on the bridge of the nose with a sharp rim of his flak helmet. Yossarian cursed him as his eyes flooded with tears. "There he is," Arfi orated funereally, pointing down dramatically at a hay wagon and two horses standing before the barn of a gray stone farmhouse. "Smashed to bits. I guess their numbers were all up." Yossarian swore at Arfi again and continued searching intently, cold with a compassionate kind of fear now for the little bouncy and bizarre buck-toothed tentmate who had smashed Appleby's forehead open with a ping-pong racket and who was scaring the daylights out of Yossarian once again. At last, Yossarian spotted the two-engined, twin-ruddered plane as it flew out of the green background of the forests over a field of yellow farmland. One of the propellers was feathered and perfectly still, but the plane was maintaining altitude and holding a proper course. Yossarian muttered an unconscious prayer of thankfulness, and then flared up at Orr savagely in a ranting fusion of resentment and relief.
"That bastard!" he began. "That goddamn stunted, red-faced, big-cheeked, curly-headed, buck-toothed, rat-bastard son of a bitch!"
"What?"
said Arfi.
"That dirty, goddamn, midget-assed, apple-cheeked, goggle-eyed, undersized, buck-toothed, grinning, crazy son of a bitch and bastard!"
Yossarian sputtered.
"What? Never mind! I still can't hear you,"
Arfi answered. Yossarian swung himself around methodically to face Arfi.
"You prick," he began. "Me? You pompous, rotund, neighborly, vacuous, complacent—"
Arfi was unperturbed. Calmly, he struck a wooden match and sucked noisily at his pipe with an eloquent air of benign and magnanimous forgiveness. He smiled sociably and opened his mouth to speak. Yossarian put his hand over Arfi's mouth and pushed him away wearily. He shut his eyes and pretended to sleep all the way back to the field so that he would not have to listen to Arfi or see him. At the briefing room, Yossarian made his intelligence report to Captain Black and then waited in muttering suspense with all the others until Orr chugged into sight overhead finally, with his one good engine still keeping him aloft, gamely. Nobody breathed. Orr's landing gear would not come down. Yossarian hung around only until Orr had crash-landed safely, and then stole the first jeep he could find with a key in the ignition and raced back to his tent to begin packing feverishly for the emergency rest leave he had decided to take in Rome, where he found Luciana and her invisible scar that same night.